This is URN.
Oh, no way! No way! You cannot do that, Ben Stokes. That is remarkable. That is one of the greatest catches of all time.
Hello and welcome to the only cricket podcast that thinks England can deal with spin. After a third disappointing test match, me and Toby are here to brighten up your cricketing life. But it's not just me and Toby, is it? Toby, I'll go to you first. How are you?
Oh, yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. Yeah, disappointed with the test match, but very excited for the podcast.
Yeah, and we're very lucky to be joined by Yas Rana, head of content at Wisden and host of the Wisden Weekly podcast. Yas, how are you today?
Yeah, very good. Excited to be on the show. Good to join you guys.
Yes, we're so lucky to have you here. Now, Toby, you got to start the tradition, haven't you?
We have. We've always got to go with it. It's our URN Super Over. So it's just six questions you ask all of our guests. And obviously it's you today, Yaz. So first question, which athlete from any other sport would you like to see play cricket?
Gareth Bale. I like left footers and those people who are left-handed. I feel like they're just more aesthetically pleasing. Imagine Bale really being a good timer of the ball. And just being like pleasant to watch.
I think he'd also look really good in a Glamorgan shirt as well. Next question, a Lord's Test fifer or a Lord's Test 100?
Fifer. I'm a bowler, fifer.
Perfect. We had a bit of a mix from those questions, so it's good to hear. Number three, what has been your favourite match you've seen live or on TV?
I was at the World Cup final, so quite hard not to choose that one. Let me try and pick something a bit different. I was at a T20 game about 5 years ago where Surrey needed six to win off three, I think against Glamorgan, as Mahmood was at the crease. Six to win off three, he misses two balls in a row and then hooks a slow ball bouncer for six off the last ball that went almost directly to where me and my mates were sitting. So that was a pretty fun finish to a game. But yeah, the serious answer would be 2019 World Cup final.
I could be wrong, but I think when we did this after the third test match, Toby gave the exact same answer for that game.
Yeah.
So you must have been sitting quite close to each other. Wow, that really is a bit of luck. If you're walking out to bat, what would be the song you wanted to walk out to?
Oh, I'm really not sure. I had too many thoughts are going through my head, so yeah, I probably wouldn't want music in my head, but if I had to choose one, oh, I don't know. I guess something relatively upbeat. I don't know, like one of the upbeat Oasis songs, something off Definitely Maybe.
Oh, yeah, sounds really good, actually.
What are three essentials of cricket tea?
Oh, so my club does tea very badly, but we do have these like mini pizzas, like really small circular ones, got to have them. Squash is essential. You've got to get the right mixture, of course, get the right strength. And then what else? Oranges. Cut oranges. I think they're important too. You need to have a nice mix. Like lots of small things for your tea. I think that's important.
Pretty much.
I must stress, my club does it really badly. And it's like almost embarrassing going to certain away grounds. Like you get some teams who put on like the family members of the players, basically like put together like a proper like restaurant style meal, which is like too much for middle of the game. But yeah, I like quite, yeah, as I said, I'm a bowler, so I don't want too heavy a tea.
You don't want to be weighed down, no.
Yeah.
So last question of the URN Super Over, would you rather be at a test match at Lord's or in the Holly Stand finals day?
Test match at Lord's, definitely. But my ideal venue to watch cricket is the Oval. I prefer watching cricket at the Oval to Lord's. I just think you get more of a mix. Everyone knows Lord's is great. It's got the history. You can feel the history when you're there. But I think Oval, I like the atmosphere. It's almost like in between Lord's and Edgbaston for test matches. It is very different for T20s. But for test matches, Oval is my favourite ground to watch cricket at.
I feel like you and Toby are really going to get on because the amount I've heard about how good the Oval is, I'll have to go this summer. And Toby, you better pay for my ticket, mate. Oh, so we are recording on International Women's Day. So the best place to start is England's men's failures being juxtaposed by England women's successes as they dominated New Zealand, winning the third and final T20 by 33 runs. It must be said that this was a bowler's game with 19 wickets falling in only 38 overs as Matty Villiers took the best figures of 3 for 10. So good to see an England side performing well on foreign soil. We haven't seen that from the men's side the last three games. We put out a poll today of me and Toby's favourite female cricketers. Yaz, we'd love to hear, who is your favourite female cricketer and why?
To watch, I'm a sucker for wicket-keeping. I think it's, I guess, because you see less and less of it now. It's like really high-class specialist keepers. So when you do see it, you appreciate it more. So historically, Sarah Taylor, now Amy Jones, I think it's amazing how Sarah Taylor's wicket-keeping has almost not been missed at all. I think Amy Jones has done an amazing job behind the stumps and she's, I guess, made that position her own. I really like watching Amelia Kerr bowl. Again, I love watching good leg spinners and I think she's right up there with the best in the women's game. Sarah Glenn's had a great start to her England career, so I enjoy watching her play as well. So I guess those are my favourite players to watch. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you haven't seen that Sarah Taylor catch at Gloucester, wow, that might be the greatest catch in all sport. It is fantastic. We all put a clip out of that on our Instagram, but it really was. I genuinely can't think of a better catch in any other sport, American football, baseball, or even cricket. It is sensational. Now, we have got a special episode with the University Ladies Cricket Team coming out on Thursday, and we discuss in that episode where female cricket can go. And Yaz, we'd love to hear your insight and what your thoughts are. Where in the next few years do you think women's cricket can go?
Well, I think after the pandemic, it's just really important they play as much as possible. I feel like quite a lot of the momentum that was built up over the I guess, three in this country, maybe 3 or 4 years in particular with women's game after that 2017 World Cup win. I think it's quite, you know, if you think about today, if you think about a year ago today, you had a World Cup final, 86,000 people in the ground. That was women's cricket really getting to a level that you really, the place where you want it to be. You want that to be normal. You want World Cup finals to be not just World Cup finals, but big games, women's cricket played in front of massive crowds. We've not really had that in the last year. So I think with the game still struggling and recovering financially, I think it's really important that we just start to see more and more women's cricket. I think there's that viral clip of first of all, as there are far more people, there are far better qualified people than me to speak about this. But I would say that there's that viral clip of a fan in New Zealand who's like 8 years old and he was in love with Sophie Devine, said that she was his favourite player. And I think you want to reach a stage where kids, and I think it's happening in some certain countries already, but kids are just aware of the men's players and the women's players equally. To them, there's not a difference. And I think you reach that point by just playing more and more of it. The England women's team haven't played that much in the last year. There are reasons for it. I don't know why there's not a women's IPL yet. It's just such an easy opportunity, I think, to put the women's game in front of an enormous audience. I think that would help massively. So I think just playing, because it's made great strides over the last few years. If you compare it to 10 years ago, even it's the difference is enormous. I think there was a Ashes tour in 2011. Australia's Rene Farrell basically bowled Australia to the game, and the only way you can really watch it is like there's a 4-minute highlight video of I think the whole Test match on YouTube. I don't think it was broadcast. It might have been at the time. I'm not sure, but it's like quite hard to find clips of that. Whereas in the last few years, that's changed for the better. It's definitely not perfect, but it's come quite far in quite a short space of time. So just getting it out there as much as possible, I think, is really important. I think the 100 will be really important in that. The first game, the 100 is going to be a women's match. There's a pretty high chance that Kate Cross or Maddie Villiers bowls the first ball. And that's a really big moment. It's English cricket's been building up towards 100 for a few years now. So yeah, having the men's 100 and the women's 100 on equal footing, I think is really important.
Yeah, we completely agree with you on that. And if you want to hear me and Toby talk a bit more on that subject matter, like we said, the diversity special is coming out on Thursday. So we'll move to sort of graver matters, it feels like, with the fourth and final test ending in quite a sort of damp squib, really. India were dominant. It's a really disappointing showing, I thought, from England as India progressed to the World Test Championship final at Lord's against New Zealand. India totally outclassed a very tired-looking English team. Yaz and then Toby, what were your thoughts on this test match?
I think that England did all right, actually. Late on day two, they were arguably in front. India was six down, trailing by 60. And although you did have the sense that India would probably roll England in the second innings, you know, we'll probably get on to how certain English batsmen struggle on this tour. And I think you've got to be careful with the criticism there, because some really established Indian players also struggled. It was just quite a hard tour for batting. And actually, I think the final scoreline, not the series scoreline, but the scores in the individual test possibly flatter India a little bit, winning those last two tests by 10 wickets and then in innings. If you look at the last test of the series, Pant doesn't play that freak knock. If that best LBW decision is given out on field, I'm not saying England win the test match, but it's very close. And also, if you kind of think of like the tools that England have, you can get into the reasons of why England don't produce as many world-class spinners as India, for example. But the matter of fact is that England just don't have that many world-class spinners. England's young batsmen don't have much experience of playing in the subcontinent. Joe Root, Chris Silverwood, they can't really do anything about that. So for England to actually properly threaten India in, I'd say, three of the four tests, I think the second test, India won very comfortably. They weren't really threatening that. The third and fourth test, there were moments where India would have been worried, and England, with certain players not available, with the, you know, the current talent pool they have, I think a 3-1 defeat and pushing India in two of them, and a very good India side as well, a team that's just beaten Australia in Australia, and India were weakened. You know what? I think England have done all right.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think England, would definitely in certain points of this game probably would have backed themselves to win it. I think they lacked perhaps one big knock from any of the players. I think Root probably in that fight in the third inning, would like to have probably pushed on himself a bit, and Dan Lawrence at the end tried his hardest with a great 50, but couldn't quite pull it off. And I think that would have been an unbelievable way for the tour to end if he'd smashed 100 or something like that. But I think it's just the little that we lost, the little bits, the sort of bits behind the scenes. There was just a mini collapse here and there, which we just couldn't quite back. Whereas India, there was always someone, it seemed like, was going to carry them. Often it was their bowlers with Akshar Patel and Ashwin, but then that final match, it was Rishabh Pant with a fantastic 100 and Washington Sundar, who I think is looking like it's quite an interesting story. Him, he could definitely, it just seems to be his batting that's keeping him in the side, which is an odd thing for an off spinner to say. It's similar to Dom Best perhaps for some of it, in the way they liked him at that number 8 position. And I think actually thinking back at the tour, it reminds me a little bit of the Ashes in Australia, the most recent one. I think this is definitely better for England, but we pushed them in quite a lot of the games, but it was just the small margins where we lost it. There was just the session here, session there, in like when you remember the Adelaide test match in Australia with the pink ball. We had some unbelievable sessions with Jimmy and Wokesy bowling out Australia for 130, I want to say. And at the Wacker, I think Dawid Malan and Johnny Bairstow had hundreds there, and we were looking all right, and then just yet again collapsed and then drew that test match at the MCG. So I think it does bode well, but we're just slightly off the pace compared to the Indians, which was slightly disappointing to see. Dom, what did you think of the final test match in the series as a whole?
Yeah, I completely agree with what you just said there. Those small margins, those winning moments, they're the sorts of 50-50s where the game is on a knife edge. England seemed to fail in every single one of those this tour, bar the first game, I thought, meaning the results looked a lot larger than what they could have been. I think they sort of, like Yaz said, they flattered India quite a lot. And that's what I was quite disappointed with England, really. I just thought there were so many occasions where we could have put our foot on their neck and really gone for the blood. And we just didn't manage to, you know, win win those important moments. And that's what I'm a little bit worried about going into next winter against Australia, where we really do have to be so cutthroat and so clinical. That's what I was most disappointed with, I'd say.
Yeah, I think on the fourth test match, on day one, England should have got more than 205. The pitch was fine. It was the best pitch since the first test match. And England had a couple of partnerships that did threaten to... it did not to take the game away from India, but it did look like England could get to around about 300. Bairstow and Stokes looked all right. Pope probably batted the best he batted all series. And there are a couple of unlucky dismissals. Pope's come to mind, edging it onto his knee, basically, and popping up to short leg. So I guess that's where it's lost. But I think comparing it to that tour, I think England are just better equipped to compete away from home. Right? If you think about 20s, those two consecutive winters in 2016-17 against India, where England lost 4-0, and then when they lost 4-0 again in Australia in 2017-18, England's real weakness that tour was, both across those two tours, was how their attack kind of lacked penetration on flat surfaces. And I think England are much better equipped than they were then to compete in those kind of conditions. Like, I think one of the low-key big plus points in this tour is seeing Ollie Stone bowling 90 plus mile per hour in India, would have very little experience of bowling those kind of conditions, and show that he can test some of the world's very best batsmen in those conditions. And if you look back on those tours, they were kind of almost defined by the struggles of the like third, fourth seamer. In the 17-18 Ashes, Tom Curran, Craig Overton, Jake Ball, to an extent Chris Wokes, all kind of struggled. Whereas England going to the next Ashes, it's a much, much stronger squad. Craig Overton might go, but he's a completely different bowler to what he was 4 years ago. And Jack Leach on this tour is good. I think he's established himself as England's first choice spinner and will be for quite a long time. So I think England are actually going in the right direction. And also, they do. I know they struggle for runs as this tour progressed, but they have scored 400 reasonably frequently under Silverwood. And I do think you can't write this series off, but India are so good. They're so good at home. And these conditions for this series in particular were like particularly difficult for batting. I won't get into the ins and outs of whether the pitches were too far in the bowler's favour, but it's got to be taken into account when you're judging the batsmen. So when you put that all together, I've said this on the Wisden podcast recently before. I think this is England's best test side in 8-9 years. I think they're better equipped for these away tours than they have been for quite a long time, actually. And I think a crucial part of this series was how Ashwin dominated Stokes and how Stokes didn't really find his best form. He only averaged 25. It wasn't just Ashwin. Akhil Patel obviously bowled very well as well. But the idea of if you have Root and Stokes in form, that's suddenly a very different looking England side who can probably worry every team in the world wherever they go.
As you mentioned there, Yaz, you said that you think Jack Leach has become England's number one spinner again. How did you think sort of Don Best has performed? He's received quite a lot of, sort of criticism on social media. Do you think that's going to help him? How do you think he might develop over the next few years?
I think Don Best is a really interesting one. I did a piece on Wisden.com kind of charting England's last 3 years of how they've selected spinners, basically. And one thing that's quite telling is England haven't really... sometimes out of misfortune with players being ill or injured, they haven't really given a spinner more than a few tests in a row, more than like two series in a row, really. Best was probably fourth or fifth choice spinner when he made his debut in 2018. Did okay. He'd only played 16 first-class games. Out of the side for 18 months, comes back into the side when Leach is injured and Moeen and Rashid are unavailable. And England don't produce that many spinners, as everyone knows. And now they were kind of forced to pick their fourth or fifth choice spinner, who's only 22, 23. Best has never been his county's first choice spinner. And to his credit, it looked like he was improving through a lot of his quite short test career. In test matches where he didn't bowl that well, he would still make some kind of contribution with the bat. In the first test of the series, he bowled probably the best he ever has done for England in the first innings, getting that fourth in the first innings. That was really crucial in the England win. He bowled poorly in the second innings. But 23-year-old spinners, especially 23-year-old England spinners, I mean, even like Ashwin, he's 34 and is only reaching his peak. I think people forget how young Bess is. So Bess, 23-year-old spinners are going to go through periods of being out of form. And I guess what's been almost hard to watch is that Bess is doing this when it mattered the most in front of, you know, a television audience of the hundreds of millions. And that's been, I think it's been sad to see. Anyone giving him abuse on social media is an idiot. He's done really, really well for England. He will benefit from a year in county cricket where he's his county's first choice spinner. I do wonder if England, I know it's easy to say in hindsight, but I do wonder if England could have got away with not playing him in that test match, either by bowling Root more and fielding an extra seamer, or getting in one of the other spinners in the touring group. So either Amar Verdi or Matt Parkinson, both of whom have done well in county cricket. But yeah, in the piece I wrote, I referenced a spell that Verdi bowled last summer at the Oval against Middlesex, where he didn't quite get his length right and the Middlesex batsman found it quite easy to sweep him, basically. And he went at four and a half and over. No one really talks about it because no one watched it, really. Like a few thousand people watch it online. There was literally no one in the ground. Spinners, young spinners go through that. It's just Bess went through it in the most public way possible. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him for a few years in international cricket, but he may well go on to have a brilliant England career. Although I think England will want to keep him around their group because he has impressed quite often, actually, in his short career to date.
Yeah, you make a really interesting point about how young he is. And I didn't even know he was 23. And just thinking about how young that is in the grand scheme of things with being on Channel 4 for the first time in whatever, 16 years, it's just not need. Like, if you're giving him comments on his Instagram, you're not going to help him in any way. So this is just the general comment. Just don't abuse cricketers. They're trying their best. It's very rare that they don't try their best. And it's not like you're a professional cricketer. This is something I've always thought. You aren't the professional cricketer. You aren't the coach. So just what are you actually going to achieve by sending him an abusive message? It really frustrates me.
This is URN.
Let's move on to a sort of overview of England's winter. Out of 10, Toby, and then Yaz, what would you rate this winter for England?
I think I'd probably go 7, I reckon, maybe 6.5. I think it isn't necessarily the performances now that England fans might have hoped for after that first test match, which everyone does seem to forget about how dominant we were in that match for most of it. Joe Root, double hundreds, England on top for a lot of it. Jimmy, that over he bowled, which yet again, a lot of people have forgotten about after his most recent performance where he bowled unbelievably again. I'd say 6.5, 7 is probably fair. And I think just looking towards the future, it looks okay. Our seam attack, as Yaz mentioned, has looked even stronger somehow, which you wouldn't necessarily expect to once you go to India and Sri Lanka over the winter. And we can score runs. And Dan Lawrence in that last innings has showed how good he can be, even though he struggled a bit at number 3. And Ollie Pope, perhaps him and Sibley, who actually got an 80 in that first match as well. So perhaps Ollie Pope is the only real person who might be struggling a bit after the series, I'd say. But 6.5, 7 out of 10, I'd say.
Yeah, I'd probably go similar to that. Maybe even 7.5. To win 3 out of 6 test matches, not easy. Not easy at all. I think I predicted 1-1 in Sri Lanka and then 3-1 against India. And I think to do better than that, I think is a pretty reasonable effort. India have only lost one other home test in the last 8 years. Like, to get that one win and to threaten India. And also, to be honest, those pitches that you got in the second and third test, it's almost a compliment that those were prepared. Like, those pitches take some of the control out of the game. If England bowled slightly better, I thought Jack Leach had a good tour. I don't think he was quite as good as some people are making out. I think he was still a little bit inconsistent in length, but given how little cricket he's played in the last year, he was good. I think it was a pretty good effort, and I think for England to win one test and threaten India in two of the other three, I think it's a pretty good effort.
Yeah, I think that's good. Don, what would you give it out of 10, out of interest?
I'd give it a 7.5. I think I've got to agree. I was quite annoyed with how the BCCI sort of prepared those pitches. And Yaz's point of it, take it as a compliment that they had to sort of use their home advantage to such an extent, really shows how much we threatened, England threatened India in that first test. And to win 2-0 in Sri Lanka, what was it? Six test matches, away test matches in a row that we've won. It really was a really positive move for English cricket. And it felt like just the dawn of a good side coming about, whether that's in 2 years, whether that's in 3 years. There's lots of seeds of hope in this team. And I'm really excited to see what that England team can look like in the next few years.
Yeah, I think England have got a real chance in Australia, and that would be what defines the real era, really. If England can even, maybe not even win the series, but like a 2-2 draw in Australia, they would leave that with a lot of credit. And I think England are reasonably well placed to do that. The Australia side isn't quite as settled as it should be, really. They play next to no test cricket before the Ashes. England play quite a lot, which could go one way or the other. If England have got a very hard summer. They're playing the best two teams in the world. And that could go one of two ways. If England struggle in those two series, maybe lose the New Zealand series, lose the India series, then you might have quite a few players going into the Ashes out of form. But look at it the other way. England will properly back themselves to win both those series. And you could have, a lot of these young, inexperienced guys we're talking about, they'd have played like nearly 30 tests. It would look like it'll feel like a reasonably experienced side with a couple of key players at their very peaks. So, yeah, I think English test cricket is in a reasonably good position at the moment.
Yeah, just before we move on quickly, where would you guys both say England need to improve most before we get to Australia?
Well, that's a good question. There are question marks about the top three who those people in the top three will be. Sibley and Burns have done decent jobs in England. I think Sibley slightly better than Burns. They've both shown they can improve on the job. They've both shown they can grind it out against high quality pace attacks. They both struggled against spin, but they're not going to face a whole lot of it in the next year. I think they, in an ideal world, you'd have one of Burns and Sibley, Crawley plus another in the top three. I think Burns and Sibley, I think their ceilings are relatively low. I think the best you're hoping for is, someone to really stick it out. Like, it's kind of the series that Roy Burns had in 2019. I think that's kind of like the best you can hope for. Whereas like someone like a Crawley, they could have a properly series defining streak. And I guess that kind of means that England, you want ideally the team that won in 2010-11, you had like six or seven players who were capable of doing that. Whereas England probably only have four or five. So that is nitpicking though. I mean, I'm not having a go at Sibley and Burns. I think they've done a pretty good job. But as I said, I think English test cricket is in a reasonably good place.
Yeah, the only thing I'd maybe add to that is I'd love to see this team with a bit more experience under their belt. I know they're going to have maybe about 30 test matches when they go to Australia. But when they play New Zealand and India this summer, they're going to face some of the great bowling attacks this world has to offer. So all I want to see is the batsmen play against great players. Let's not play teams like Bangladesh where we're not really challenged. I want to see them face the best the world test bowling can offer. So that can elevate players. When the sort of example I'd use is when carbon, this is a bit of GCSE chemistry, when carbon gets under a lot of pressure, it becomes a diamond. And I think that's what England batsmen need to undergo. They need to go real pressure and then they can become those diamonds that we all love to see and love to watch to bat.
I think that is right. I think that this summer will be huge. It'll be a massive test for someone like Pope, someone like Crawley. It'll be a step up from last summer. I think Crawley in particular is in for I think he's going to be so important in the next 12 months. I think how England go in those next three test series will be quite not dependent, but I think Zach Crawley's success, I think will go quite a long way. I think he's got a really good game against pace. He's not actually been dismissed by pace in test cricket since last summer because he only got out to spin in Asia. And yeah, he just looks like he just has more time than most batsmen coming through. I think he's genuinely capable of having a real breakthrough series somewhere in the next year.
Yeah, I think we can all agree this summer's gonna hopefully show the England players in the best light, sorry. And it'll hopefully bode well for the winter to follow.
This is University Radio Nottingham.
So on to a sort of slightly different topic, Yaz. Yeah, you're a journalist, you work for Wisden, and we'd love to know a bit more about it. So could you explain to us and the listeners what your day job is like?
Oh, what a question. So my focus is on all things digital. So the website, wisden.com, social media feeds, podcasts, and any videos that we do. I kind of run all that with Ben Gardner, who's the managing editor. And we've got a really good team. We've got a team out in India. Tahar Hashim's a features editor. We kind of all work very closely together. Wisden.com is actually reasonably new. So it was only launched in 2017 ahead of the 17-18 Ashes. So we're still kind of developing and trying out new things. And I think this summer is really exciting. I think there's a lot of big cricket on that we're looking forward to covering in more depth, more video, more in-depth articles online, etc. A bit of everything, really.
Well, that's good to say. I guess with 100 coming up and the test matches, it's going to be a good sum, hopefully. So what would you say perhaps some of the best perks of your job are, and perhaps some surprise negatives you might have about your profession?
Perks are that you get to watch a lot of cricket. if you don't enjoy it, you're in the wrong job. And also that aspect of it is brilliant. I've only been in it for 2.5 years, but I'm definitely not tired at all in terms of how much I enjoy watching it, enjoy covering it, etc. Surprising negatives of the job would be sleep patterns. So overnight tests in other side of the world, very early starts. That actually takes up quite a lot of your winter. I had my, I turned 24 during the New Zealand-England series last year doing night shifts. That wasn't great.
As your profession must allow you to go into some amazing places and go to some amazing places, and that also includes press areas, and I think I might know what might be number one, but what is your number two and your worst press centre in cricket?
Number two is Lords.
Okay.
Number one's Edgbaston. The food there is quite special. The food's another level. You're really high up. You kind of feel like you're above everything. Not too dissimilar to Lords, actually. So that's probably my favourite press box. And did you say worst?
Yeah.
So I covered the Women's T20 World Cup qualifier in 2019. Any guesses as to where that was?
I want to say Papua New Guinea.
No, I wish.
Isle of Wight?
No, closer. It was Dundee and Arbroath at the Arbroath ground, which we had to... So we were staying in Dundee, and it's like a half an hour like express train. So it's not like it's like a commuter train or anything. It's like an express, like one of the national trains that go from Aberdeen to London. Half an hour on that from Dundee to Arbroath. Then there's like a 20-minute walk from the station to the ground. It was a nice ground. Nothing wrong with that. And initially they had a press tent set up outside. There wasn't enough space in the pavilion, basically. But this was Arbroath, which is north of Dundee, which is north of Edinburgh, which is north of England, in September. It was cold. It was really, really windy. And the tent was kind of, it was attached to the ground. Basically, people had put bricks over tarpaulin to make sure it stick together. But that didn't work. It was so windy that the press tent pretty much flew off. So we ended up having to move into the pavilion, which sounds like the obvious thing to do, but actually there was a serious reason why we couldn't be in the pavilion. So there's something called the PMOA, the player match official area, and they're really rightfully very protective over it. I think part of it is like anti-corruption and stuff like that, make sure there are no mobile phones in that area, etc. And there are really strict rules about who can be in there. They had to change that so that we could go into it. And also, because it's cold, the spectators want to be inside as well. And the spectators had to be in the pavilion as well. So it was like really crammed, actually. So that's the worst press box I've been to. Is there anything else that's similar? So I've done some work with the IOC in the past, so that's why I went to that tournament. I went to the Under-19 World Cup in South Africa. There are a couple of mixed, really. The ground at Potchefstroom, the main ground's brilliant, but the a lot of the games that tournament were played basically on uni grounds. So like it's a big, so like Potchefstroom is basically the South African Loughborough in terms of like that is the main sporting university, amazing facilities, athletes from all around the country study there. And a lot of the games were just basically held at uni grounds and the press boxes were just tents basically. So yeah, those are the worst. All the ones I've been to in the UK, sorry, in England at least, have been really good. I really like Cardiff as well. I like Cardiff.
Good to hear. On a similar note, you often mention on the Wisdom podcast some of the interviews you guys get to do. And I was wondering who are your sort of favourite players to interview and anyone who might have given a more spiky interview?
I don't think I've ever done one where the player's been unreasonable. I think players are generally quite patient. David Gow was amazing. Just hearing him talk. So that was for the Wisdom podcast. He was amazing. Just hearing him talk about the game. He just got such a nice voice. And he just experienced so much. He's like at a stage of life where he's just very reflective, and but I don't think he ever really took things that seriously, so he was amazing. So yeah, during lockdown we had a couple of big names on the podcast who are really good. I really enjoyed, we picked like a world test, a Wisdom test team in the 90s reasonably recently. We got Graham Thorpe on for that. He was brilliant. I sometimes find that some of the more fun interviews to do are players who aren't that well known. So I did one relatively recently with Jake Lintott, who's a left arm wrist spinner at Warwickshire. And he had a really good T20 blast, but actually was out of contract for a lot of this winter. He was juggling, wanted to become a professional cricketer. He's in his mid to late 20s, juggling becoming a professional cricketer along with what was a really good full-time job he had. He was, I think, head of cricket at quite a big independent school in Somerset. And that's like just quite interesting. That's not something you normally hear when you talk to cricketers. Similarly, I remember interviewing James Bracey after he just got called up for the England Lions, Hassan Azad after he had a really good season in 2019. I interviewed Dan Lawrence before he played for England. Like those players I almost enjoy talking to more because like you actually feel like you're finding stuff out, whereas some of the England players or more established players or former players, they do so much press. It's not that they're less interesting, it's just you've heard what they've said quite a lot. People are so used to them. I almost look forward to interviewing someone who's a little bit less known than somebody who is really, really famous. That said, I've enjoyed the vast majority of interviews I've done. I honestly don't think I've ever had an interview with someone where I thought he was a bit of an arse. Genuinely don't think I've ever had that.
That's so disappointing. We really wanted to hear some sort of horror story of, yeah, and he smashed me with his bat and then the police were involved. Oh, that's disappointing.
I had one not great interview experience, but that was not the fault of the player at all. It was Viv Richards, actually. So it was, there was just some kind of, he was promoting a company. I can't remember what it was about. And they basically invited members of the press to interview him at the Excel Centre, I think, in East London. And Richard was amazing. He was a lot like Gower. It was, you know, you kind of hung on to every word that he uttered. But the issue was I was promised I'd get 15 minutes with him. And this was for something for both the podcast and the magazine. And 15 minutes isn't that long with the play. I really want a little bit more. And so I'd written out my list of questions, anticipating 15 minutes. And the guy was he was pretty adamant I'd get 15 minutes. And then with 5 minutes to go, he says, sorry, we've got Talk Sport on the radio. You need to do the interview now. This is over. So that was really annoying because it was a really good conversation that I was enjoying that was cut short. But honestly, hand on heart, I don't think I've had like a bad experience interviewing players. I mean, to be honest, players have to agree to an interview before you do it. So like, if they don't want to do it, they just won't agree to it.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds like you've got an absolute dream job being able to talk to Sir Vivian Richards as part of your job. Now, we are part of the URN sports section, and many of us would like to go into sports journalism. What one tip would you give to yourself at our age of 19 going into this field of work?
What one thing I'd do is maybe give a couple of pieces of advice. I think one would be to consume as much content of the of the style that you want to produce yourself. So you become aware of what kind of the decisions that the people producing it are making, be it writing, videos, etc. If you want to become a writer, I would suggest just reading loads and loads, and then writing lots as well. So once you start writing more and more, understand yourself, the decisions that a writer is making, if you get what I mean. I remember when I was at university, I was the editor of a student newspaper for a couple of years. You got like really smart people who obviously could be good. What they'd write wouldn't be great. And it's because they just hadn't done much of it. Writing news stories, for example, is just slightly different to other styles of writing, just knowing how that works. I think just doing lots of it, I think, is quite important. The other thing I'd say is just broaden your skills if possible. I think the media landscape is changing. It's changed very quickly. We don't know what it's going to look like in 10 years' time. So I think almost like being a young English batsman preparing for a trip to Asia, you've got to learn on the job. So actually, how adept you are, I guess, for picking up new skills. So like some of the stuff I do now. So I never did any podcasting before I joined Wisden. And that's something I wish I did before I joined Wisden. And yeah, doing a broad range of stuff instead of just focusing on one thing. Although there will be some people who'd give completely contradictory advice to that.
Yeah. And yes, I noticed when me and Toby almost had eye contact there, and we just went, yes, we need to start doing that. We need to broaden our horizon. So thank you so much for that piece of advice, because I know we're both interested in that.
DJ! This is URN University Radio Nottingham.
Now, moving on to a much lighter topic, it's time for the URN Ashes. And Yaz, you will be my representative. Yaz, to let you know, this has come from Belgium, as Rachel, who is part of UNLCC, has given us a very special game. She says this reminds her of England and being at uni. So thank you so much, Rachel, for listening. A bit of a shout out for you there. So she's come up with a game called An Absolute Wordy, where I will give you five words describing one international cricketer.
Yeah.
Your buzzer noise is, so just as I said, funny off spinner for England, I'd say Phil Salt. Is it Graham Swan?
Got it. And I can choose any county player.
The more niche, the better. That would be my piece of advice. And Toby's racking his brains now, quite worried, because he's 4-3 down after being 3-1 up. And yes, it seems like you know a lot about cricket, it's fair to say. So I will start with the first five-word hint. Okay, so number one, female England legend wicketkeeper.
Freddie Vandenberg.
Oh, yes, Ron. Right, yes,
Sarah Taylor.
Yes, 1-0. Okay. Toby looked very scared there throughout that. For the listener, Yas got so close to his camera. It was like he was trying to grab me and say, yes, it's Sarah Taylor. It was quite scary, I'm going to be honest. Okay, 1-0 up. And we move to question two. Afro, white lips and slinger.
Freddie Vandenberg.
Yes.
Lasith Malinga.
Yes.
I'm struggling.
Come on, Toby, you can play as well.
Sorry, I didn't realise. Oh, I thought it was just, you know, one player thing. Okay, I'll join.
Oh, no, it's for everyone. Okay, number three, as Yas goes into it with a 2-point lead. Dutch Aussie skier and bowler.
Freddie Vandenberg.
Yes.
Dirk Nannes.
Correct. Wow.
I nearly said Adam Zampa, because there's a Slovakian skier called Adam Zampa.
Who is there?
I'm fairly sure. If you put in like Adam Zampa on Instagram, there are two verified sports accounts. One is Adam Zampa and the other one is Adam Zampa, the Slovakian skier. So, yeah.
That's someone who's done a lot of research about Adam Zampa in the past few years.
That is come on, Toby. I didn't know either of those ones there.
Right. Okay. 3-0 up going into the fourth, and there's only 10. So if Yas gets to six, then game's over. So this is going to need an Istanbul style comeback, Toby. Okay. Question four. Get ready for a broken arm.
Gus Atkinson? Is it Mitchell Johnson?
No, it's not. Yes.
Freddie Vandenberg?
Yeah.
Michael Clarke?
No, it was the batsman who said it, George Bailey. Oh, sorry, that was a bit vague. I'll tell you that's my fault. So 3-0 going into the fifth. Okay. The heaviest test cricketer ever.
Freddie Vandenberg, Rakeem Cornwall.
Yes, 4-0.
That was speed from Yaz there. I was just
maybe my internet's better than yours.
We might have to give him a chance here. Now, this one, Toby, if you don't get this, hang your head in shame.
Son. Yeah.
Okay, question six with a 4-0 lead. Young retired Surrey spinner.
Gus Atkinson? Ansari?
Yes, it is Ansari, 4-1. There's a glimmer of hope there. There's a glimmer. Okay, we move to question seven. A few sixes, remember the name.
Gus Atkinson, Carlos Brathwaite?
It is Carlos Brathwaite. So that internet excuse wasn't valid, was it? 4-2. Okay. Scared of ghosts and LBWs.
Freddie Vandenberg, Shane Watson.
It is Shane Watson. There's that great piece of... there's a great clip of Darren Goff spooking him out at Durham, which I'd implore every cricket fan to watch. Now, there's three questions left.
Right, just on Durham funny stories, there's a really funny story about Tim Bresnan and I think Stuart Broad pranking, or no, Tim Bresnan and Jimmy Anderson pranking Graham Swan. It's on like the Yorkshire were releasing like a weekly podcast during lockdown. One of the episodes on there, I think it was from there, or it might have been on the Grey Cricketer. I can't remember. Anyway, in the summer, Tim Bresnan told this very funny story about pranking Graham Swan, and that was at Durham. I don't want to ruin it because it is genuinely hilarious, but I'd recommend you looking that up.
Fair play. I Tim Bresnan just seems like someone you'd love to have a pint with. Is that just a me thing? Because I just love him. I just want to hug him. He just looks like such a nice, huggable person. Okay. So, moving on to the eighth. And what's the score again? 5-2? 5-2, I'm going to say. 5-2,
yeah.
Three left. Yorkshire bowler, twice Ashes winner.
Freddie Vandenberg, Tim Bresnan.
It is Tim Bresnan. Oh. That was spooking. as you were saying that story about Tim Bresnan, I was like, oh no, he knows the next question. How does he know it? Wow. So the game goes to Yaz, but we'll play the last two because otherwise it would be a waste of me writing these clips. And we like to hear players from home getting involved. So if you have any other ideas, please get in touch with us on Instagram or Twitter. 6-2. Toby, this is really for pride. Can you get back into the, let's see if you can get it up to 7-3. That'll be a success for you, I'd say. Right, last two. 2013 Ashes legend in Nottingham.
Gus Atkinson. I'm just going to go for Stuart Broad.
Oh, it's the other player from that series who was known for his Trent Bridge antics. Will Yas get it?
So say again, 2013 Ashes winner.
2013 Ashes legend in Nottingham.
Freddie Vandenberg, Ian Bell.
I'm afraid it very easily could be, but I went with Ashton Agar for his 98. Yeah. Yeah. Not 98 out, the highest score by a number 11. So we move to the final question. Can Toby half the deficit here? Visually impaired Kiwi spin bowler.
Gus Atkinson? Is it Vittori?
It is Daniel Vittori, one of my favourite spinners of all time. So the Euro and Ashes ends there, and it's 5-3 in the series as the game ends 6-3. Yaz, congratulations. Thank you so much for being my representative. Your knowledge of Freddie Vandenberg was sensational, must be said. And thank you so much for coming on this podcast. We really can't say enough how grateful we are to have you on this podcast. Now, if you want to get in contact with us like Rachel did from Belgium, please DM us or comment on one of our posts on Instagram or Twitter. Yaz, thanks again for coming on and go well.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Cheers.
This is URN. Remarkable. That is one of the greatest catches of all time.